If you need to contact Narcotics Anonymous or are interested in our sponsorship Behind the Walls program, please contact ARSC Regional H&I, P.O. Box 1351, Phoenix, Arizona 85001. Hello, my name is Matthew M. I am an addict in recovery. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And today I am joined by Gary H., a formerly incarcerated member of Narcotics Anonymous, who's going to be joining us today to share his experience, strength, and hope, his process of discovering recovery, his process of becoming a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and how all of those things tie into being an incarcerated member of this fellowship. So, Gary, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Matt. It's good to be here.
Absolutely, man. I'm glad you're here. I'm excited to hear more about your story. You know, I've known Gary for a little while now, here on the outside, and I'm very, very interested to hear what his experience, strength, and hope is regarding the process of recovery on the inside, something that he has a lot more expertise than I do on the topic. So, Gary, tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, what is your clean date? How long have you been outside? How long were you inside? If you'd like to share that, you know, just some of those basic things.
All right. As we always like to start, my name is Gary, and I am an addict.
Hey, Gary.
My clean date is 11/24/19. I spent this last time I was in there for a little bit over 4 years, but in total, I've done probably close to six. So out of 10 years in my 20s, I spent six of those years locked up.
Gotcha. Okay. And then were you already a member of Narcotics Anonymous prior to going into to becoming incarcerated, or what was that kind of situation like?
No.
Oh, so interesting. So you actually became a member of Narcotics Anonymous while in incarcerated.
Yes. So before I went to prison this last time, I had very, very little knowledge of Narcotics Anonymous. I used to sleep outside of a recovery based place, and that was like that was the closest I've ever gotten to a recovery room before.
Okay. So were your charges that led you to inside this time, were those drug related? Was it obvious that you needed a program of Narcotics Anonymous well before you realized it?
Well, so my charges for what I went to prison for this time technically weren't drug related, but the way my life was because of my addiction to drugs, I mean, they were right. Definitely drug related in nature. Yes,
definitely. I understand exactly what you mean. No, I totally get that. So I'm very interested in this. You know, I personally can't imagine what it would be like to first discover, you know, a life in recovery inside. So what was your first experience like with that? How long were you inside before you even heard about recovery? How did that even come about?
So let me tell you a little bit about how I eventually got into Narcotics Anonymous while in prison. You know, I was in prison. So when I went to prison, COVID had just happened. So as soon as COVID happened, you know, everything was shut down.
Right.
You know, didn't matter what yard you were on, what level of security you were on, everything was shut down.
Right. It was full lockdown.
Yeah, it was full lockdown. I mean, you weren't able to gather. I mean, there were some places where you weren't allowed to leave your bunk. You know what I mean? Like, it was, COVID was a rough time for the incarcerated, as it was a rough time for people out here, I imagine.
Right.
And, you know, so my first 2 years, you know, there was a lot of moving. There was a lot of, you know, you'd be good for a couple months and then things would shut down. So like my first 2 years, I stayed clean because I knew I wanted to. That was why I stayed clean. I didn't think about recovery yet. I thought
okay.
when I was looking
at abstinence.
Yes. So like I thought like as long as I just stayed clean, that as long as I didn't use drugs, that I was doing the deal.
Got it.
That was
okay.
what
Got
I
it.
thought. Yes.
Right. Right.
And then as things started to lift, and I thought that the burden of being me would lessen the more clean that I got, and come to find out it wasn't lessening. And I got very lucky. I went to a yard after, things started opening up, and there was yards that are out there that they send you to go work. And I went to a yard where there was a lot of jobs, and ended up getting there, and it was very deep in recovery.
Interesting.
Yeah, the yard had its own issues, and with those issues, there was a group of people there that wanted to they wanted to help build a little bit of I don't know how you'd say it, but there was so many issues there, and there was people that were trying to combat those issues.
So there was almost a
And
sense of community in a way, almost a sense of fellowship in a way.
yeah, it was like there was a villain, and then there was the people banding against the villain, kind of. And
Interesting.
I got there, and who eventually became my first sponsor. I had went there, and I, he was introducing me to, the pod that I was in, the run that I was in, and he was asking me, he's like, if you do this, this, and this, just make sure to be able to pay your money. And I told him, I'm like, no. I don't do that. I'm about, like, I'm all about exercise, and I'm all about staying off of drugs, and I don't do that. And he's like, well, he's like, are you serious about it? I'm like, absolutely, I'm all about it. And he's like, well, have you ever gone to a meeting? And my first thought when he said that was like, I don't believe in God, but that was my first,
I
very
think
first thought.
that's a lot of our first thought when we first
Yep.
start thinking about a 12-step program. That is true. Yeah, definitely.
I told him, I'm like, listen, man, I'm not religious. He's like, what makes you think that matters?
Oh, I love it.
I'm like, well, I told him, since I had talked such a big game about wanting to stay clean, I'm like, you know what? I'll go to this meeting. And I went to this meeting, and the meeting, my first sponsor, he was actually the guy that got those meetings on that yard, and so he was very involved in the service structure of it there. And since I had talked a big game, he's like, well, if you're so serious about being clean, why don't you, at this yard you had to like have a sign-in sheet, so like there was so they could track, like, you say you were here. So I was responsible for the notebook with the readings, the sign-in sheets. I had to make sure I was essentially the greeter. And that was my first taste
So you jumped
of,
right into service from the beginning, huh?
before I even knew what it was.
I love it. Hey,
Before.
that's beautiful right there. We often say service work keeps us clean, and you're proof of that. You were doing service before you even realized it.
And I'll tell you this, Matt, just the feeling. So when I stepped foot in there, and I knew I wanted to be clean, but again, I was still a little iffy about whether I wanted to be. I thought at first it was something religious, but the fact that I had a role, I had a purpose there. Like in my head, as a from the upbringing that I've come to, where I've just been a wanderer who never fit in, and all the cliches about being a loner. And when I had that position, that service, it kept me going back. You know what I mean? Like even the days where, like, our meetings were on Sunday, and everybody knows what Sunday is in prison. It's football. You know what I mean? Like it's football, and like football's a
Same on
big
the
thing.
outside as
Same on the
well.
outside, except you can't watch it, like you can't just watch it anywhere. So like it was hard, but I always remembered, I was like, you know what? Like I told him I would do this. This is my responsibility to do this. I'm gonna keep going and doing it. And that
Wow,
was my
that's
And that's when I realized, I'm like, you know what? Like, my issue isn't that I don't belong. My issue has been that I haven't allowed myself to belong somewhere.
Oh, I and that is such a beautifully and well eloquently said statement, and I feel that so much because that's one of my favorite things about the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous is that I too believe it gave me the opportunity to belong, and on a level deeper than than I previously had ever felt. So that was so beautifully said. So how did that then transition? So you immediately got involved with service. What did the meeting, I mean, how many meetings are there, were there on that yard? It sounds like you were on a pretty good yard that had, a lot better resources than some, but kind of what did that look like? Did you have multiple meetings a day? Did you have one meeting? Were there a lot of members? Give me a little bit of insight about that.
So, unfortunately, on the yard that I was on, that there was a few meetings for, there was a few anonymous meetings. You had your other fellowships that
Right.
had more meetings than NA
Right.
had. And after going to the meetings, regularly, my friends started to become members of, and we had people from the other for the fellowship coming over, because it's not like you can just pick and choose,
Right.
when you want to go. So you had other fellowships coming over, and sometimes we'd go over there, and
Right.
it became it I built my own community in there. There
Beautiful,
was a group of us that we were all about the one thing, and that those became my best friends.
right,
Those became the guys that I would, as they colloquially say in there, spread with. You know what I mean? Like, those
okay,
are the guys that we that I ate with. Those are the guys that I went to chow with. Those are the guys that I, and they were about the same things I was about. And the next thing you know it, since I was hanging out with recovery-based people, my life in there started becoming about recovery. Like
right.
the slang that we would use is about recovery. And unfortunately, this yard, it was a good yard. It had, like I said, it had its own issues. So, the meetings, they varied.
Okay.
It was a working yard. A lot of guys got sent out the gate for a couple hours, and you'd come back and you'd work. So you'd have guys gone at like odd hours of the day. So,
Gotcha.
like,
Okay.
sometimes they didn't, the meetings were four people, and then the
Gotcha.
meetings would be 20 something people. And but what we learned in there is a meeting takes two.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
Yep,
all it
that's
takes is two people.
absolutely. And it sounds like you did a very good job of exactly what we always tell, newcomers, whether it's inside of a facility or outside, and that is to build a foundation and to use that foundation. It sounds like you found like-minded people that all wanted to do that same thing and were able to develop a foundation, which, I feel is such an important thing, especially early on, being able to rely on that. And it sounds like you really were able to kind of develop within that. So how did that process then continue? Did you started off kind of being the greeter, kind of almost a sort of secretary in a way. Did you then, continue your service work within that? What did the sponsorship process look like? How did that process continue?
So, as I told you, my first sponsor was the guy who reached out to NA, and NA helped facilitate having us meetings in there. Well,
Right.
eventually, unfortunately, he ended up getting released, and our meeting needed a chairperson.
Okay.
And lo and behold, I had already known the whole thing. By the time he left, I was super entrenched in being of service to this
Right.
meeting, and I took it on.
Beautiful.
And for 2 years, I opened up those doors every Sunday right after chow. And I opened those doors. I chaired those meetings. 2 years, and I'll tell you what, in those 2 years of chairing that meeting, I got to watch guys come in, and guys that you wouldn't typically hang out with on the yard.
Right.
Guys that there was times where these guys would come in the room, and you would think, like, man, this dude is so, he was acting up on the yard. There's no way he's going to come in here. I've seen
Right.
guys transform,
Right. Right.
and for 2 years I chaired that meeting, and I ended up getting in touch with some people, some NA members on the outside, from them sending us literature and stuff like that. And I got to become part of NA before I was ever free. I got to become free while
While
incarcerated
you were incarcerated,
because of
right?
that service position. And it
Right.
was the most fulfilling 2 years I had ever had up until that point in my
No, and
life.
that's beautiful. And that leads me to the question, and I'm glad you mentioned, your first sponsor ended up, getting his freedom. What was that process like? This man who'd been sponsoring you, who'd kind of been showing you the ropes within, Narcotics Anonymous, and now, what happened after that? Did you find a new sponsor? Did you start working with somebody outside? Like, how did that process work?
So while I was in there, after my sponsor left, he told me, because my original thought was when, my first sponsor left that I was essentially like, I guess, done with the steps.
Okay.
And my sponsor at the time told me, he's like, listen, he's like, you're never done.
Right.
You're never done. And the worst disservice you can do to yourself is think that you're recovered, that you passed, and that you're
Right.
done,
That you graduated,
that
right?
you graduated. Yeah, he's like, that will never happen.
Right.
And he's like, if you were serious about this, and by this time you would think he knew I was serious, but he knows the
Right.
game. He's like, listen, if you're still serious about this, you opening up the rooms and being of service isn't your only responsibility as a recovering addict. Your other responsibility is to recover. And the
Absolutely.
only way you recover is you get another goddamn sponsor.
Yes, sir. Yep. Yep,
And
sir.
so he told me when trying to find a sponsor, you need to find somebody that you see something in them that you want.
Absolutely. Yep.
And through the having guys come into the meetings, I met guys that, while I was there, I met dudes I wanted. My next sponsor was a guy that I watched him conduct himself on the yard. He was everybody respected him. He
Okay.
worked out. He didn't use fear. He used respect. He was a very, at the time he was like a man's man. I was
Gotcha.
like, you know
Okay.
what? I want to be like that. And he was all about recovery. And I said, you know what? He said, if you find somebody, just ask him. And I went
Okay,
and I
right.
asked him, and he was like, yeah. And so there was my next sponsor.
Gotcha. Okay, perfect. I mean, that's what we always say. We always got to make sure we have a sponsor because, if we're sponsoring ourselves, we're in trouble. We are in
Yes.
trouble. Now, one thing that I'm curious about, especially because you discovered Narcotics Anonymous while inside, and one of the most important things about Narcotics Anonymous is that, we always say we're not a religious program, but we are a spiritual one. And so much of what we do in recovery is about developing the spiritual principles within our step work and then applying those into our daily lives. And I'm curious what that kind of looked like while you're developing, your spirituality or these spiritual principles, and how you were able to apply those to the life of an incarcerated inmate.
So as I said in the beginning, I my first hesitation towards NA was a higher power.
Right.
Well, at the time it was God,
It
because
was God, right.
God, for a lot of us, we think God is, if when we hear higher power, we obviously automatically equate it to God.
Right.
And while doing the steps, and they talk about it in step two, we come to believe that a power greater than ourselves. And my sponsors have told me, and then I started to realize, while being in there, so like while I was out and about on the streets before I ever got to prison, I obviously committed crimes.
Right.
And every time I committed a crime, just to get what I needed to get, I felt bad.
Right.
And I felt like I was gonna be punished. It wasn't so much the law that I was worried about, but there was something always inside me that thought, like, oh man, like I'm like karma, like this is gonna be
You
bad.
had a conscience, right? You
Yeah,
had some element of that, right?
absolutely. And then as I was developing, as we're talking about a higher power, and I'm still fighting this battle with like the word God and stuff like that, I come to realize that, like I already believed in a higher power. Like I said, I still, God is not my higher power, not the formal use of God, but like I started to really like believe that, like, bad things happen when you do bad things.
Right.
And then I discovered the definition for God for me now. Good
Okay.
orderly direction. And I
Yes.
started to realize when I did good, and not just good, like, opening the door for somebody or being nice, which is what we should do still, but
Right.
when I did good from like myself, I woke up, I made my bed. I woke up, I brushed my teeth. I woke up, I cleaned up my area. I was responsible. Like we still talk about it, like metaphorical cleaning up our side of the street. I
Right.
woke up and I literally cleaned my
Cleaned up my
side of the
right.
street.
Yeah,
You know what I
absolutely.
mean?
Yep.
And I started to realize, like, good orderly direct, like as I started to do that and I became responsible for my environment, I became responsible for my mental, physical, and spiritual well-being.
Right.
I became responsible for it. Instead of
Absolutely.
like hoping for something else to come and make me feel better, I said, you know what? When I clean up and I have an organized area, I feel better. When I'm
Absolutely.
polite to people and I'm respectful towards people, or like even if I have to stand my ground, I feel better about myself. When
Absolutely.
I go to meetings and I go and I work out and I go out there and I do something positive for myself, I feel better. When I do good, there is an orderly direction that follows
I love
every
that.
single time. And
Yeah.
you know, as I found myself on the yard and I started to apply these principles in my life, you know, while being in there, I started to notice like I wasn't stressing so much about what I was missing on the outside. I was no
Gotcha.
longer stressing so much about, am I going to fit into the world when I get out there? I'm not so much now stressing about how am I ever going to be forgiven for what I've done. It started to become, oh, go ahead,
No,
sorry.
I was gonna say, and that sounds like such a level of the spiritual principle of serenity right there. That
Yeah,
sounds just beautiful serenity.
once you take responsibility and then you say, you know what, I'm not going to let this disease stop me from still becoming something. Because my biggest fear when I got clean was, since I had gone so far into it, that there was nothing left for me. I had ruined myself. I had gone past the point of return.
Right.
And then once I started to see those, like you were saying, brief moments of serenity when I was just doing those basic things, I started to realize like that person that I knew I could become, I was becoming, and it was by my own, you know what I mean? I was doing it on my own. And I started to realize like I was no longer in fear of being forgiven. Now I was driven to become the man that can be
That
forgiven.
you could be for, oh, I love that. Absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's a powerful thing. You were able to rechannel, all of the potential negative energy into positive, and
Yes.
like you said, become who the somebody that could be forgiven. Well, no, and I want to, before we wrap up this first part here, I do want to give an opportunity for you to, if, we don't tell people what to do in the fellowship, in Narcotics Anonymous, we give some suggestions. So I want to give you the opportunity right now, if somebody's listening that is interested in getting, involved in recovery, that realizes maybe they realize they're an addict, maybe they realize they have a problem, maybe they just are trying to get some help. As a member who was formerly incarcerated, what would be some suggestions that you could give to our incarcerated members who maybe are not sure where to start?
You know, my only, I mean, there's a lot of suggestions, obviously, because there's a lot of things that you're going through in there that can make life hard in there. But my one suggestion for everybody in there is never think it's too late. It doesn't matter how much time you're facing. It doesn't matter the crimes you committed. It doesn't matter. None of that matters.
Right.
It's never too late. Life in there doesn't have to be negative.
Right.
Life in there doesn't have to be meaningless.
Right.
Like I was saying, when I started doing good for myself and I started taking responsibility for my spiritual self, my physical self, and my mental health, it changed my entire outlook on life while being locked up, the potential life for a felon with my kind of charges when I got out. It changed my whole perspective because I realized I can make it through it. And it changed everything. Never think it's too late.
I
You
love
are
that.
never too far gone. It's never too late to get clean. It's never too late to change your life. We are always here waiting for you. The program is always here waiting for you. And we love you. And there's a thousand, hundreds of thousands of other members that have gone through what you've gone through in some way or another that have made it through. You
No,
will too.
that's absolutely true, and that is a great way to close this. At the end of the day, we are a worldwide fellowship that has members incarcerated, not incarcerated. We have the opportunity every single day to continue this new way of life and become the best versions of ourselves. Thank you for closing that way, giving a true message of hope, because that's what we're here to do. So that is going to wrap us up for our first episode here with Gary H. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and your story of finding the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous while incarcerated. That is such a beautiful story, and I really appreciate you taking the time and being here today.
Thank you, Matt. It was great being here.
Absolutely. And thank you all for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes. If you would like to speak directly with a member of Narcotics Anonymous, please contact our phone line at 844-991-AZNA. Again, that's 844-991-2962.